Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of Chicago, and he is sweating. Danny Burke and you, we are loaded up for you on Wednesday. Can join us, open phones this segment, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. 5865, numbers to get in, your chance to qualify for Nebraska-Purdue tickets, that giveaway coming up at 525 on Thursday. So we'll draw a winner for Purdue-Nebraska. We'll get you qualified this hour and next hour. Christian Gaylord, he has been grinding for a long time at Nebraska, is a junior, part of that offensive line. We'll have comments and thoughts from him as Christian sat down with me on Monday. And his takeaway from Michigan, his thoughts on the offensive line, his story, as he's a guy that is trying to find playing time. He is he an option on the offensive line this Saturday against Purdue? I don't know. Spots are up for grabs. And you have Nebraska that they have had 3 weeks of soul searching. They've had a unique and intense season, and they're winless. Some thoughts from Coach Walters, from Ryan Held, and we'll slip in a little Mario Verduzco just for good measure. The act of God was hilarious today from Mario, his comments on that. So Christian Gaylord coming up. We'll run down Brad Edwards, Mike Shewhart. Shuey going to be in. We'll talk a little football and golf with Shuey. Get his take on Tiger, get his take on the Ryder Cup, and thoughts on football. We'll tackle the Kelly Bryant situation at Clemson as well. And if you're Nebraska, do you get in the quarterback transfer market for next year? Are you thinking about that despite what you have for 2019 recruiting wise? And oh yeah, a guy named Adrian as your starter. Now, can email us, Chris at HailVarsity.com, and find us and follow us on Twitter at Schmidt underscore radio, at Danny Burke 5, or at Hail Varsity. So here's my question for you. And so far, so good for Nebraska football this week as they prep for Purdue. The word of the week is reset. And you maybe heard it going into Michigan because it's now conference play. But can Nebraska reset? I think they can. I'll tell you why. But really it is. Does Nebraska reset and get right Saturday? Or is it a replay? Not necessarily of last Saturday, but is it a replay of Colorado or Troy? I mean, we're all trying to figure out what the heck's going to happen on Saturday. We don't really know what this team is. We thought we knew after Colorado. You had a very different opinion of what they were against Troy. And then most just covered their eyes on Saturday once it got to 14-0 or once it got to 20-0. So they're trying to take the temperature or the pulse of this football team is really, really hard right now. This week is a little bit more unique, though, in a good way for Nebraska as they head in. Here's Troy Walters today, and so far so good as guys are ramping up to get ready for Seabass and the Boilermakers.
Yeah, the guys have responded. You know, we were frustrated after Michigan. We went there and they kicked our butts. But the guys came back and we put that one behind us. We're kind of in reset mode. You know, first 3 weeks, they are what they are. We got to look ahead, look forward. The guys have had three good practices. Last week, our Thursday sucked. And so the guys know that we have to have great meetings tonight and then we have to have a great Thursday. That really sets the tone. So,
okay. So, yeah, last week sucked. It looked like it's Saturday. It's been a unique three-week run. Game canceled. Quarterback hurt. Narrow loss to bitter rival. Maybe. The bitter rival part. Overconfident. didn't pay much attention, limited options, conservative game plan, upset loss to non-Power 5 team week two. Week three, destroyed by NFL defense and humbled on national TV in a blue blood game. Because you're not even close. Am I the only one that when I turn on a football game and watch, and it can get better, maybe Nebraska will look like a good competitive team here at some point this year. I think they can. But, Danny, am I the only guy that when I'm watching TCU, Ohio State, and Ohio State's their own world, Alabama's their own world, but even... I mean, I haven't seen Nebraska look like a team that can go win a football game for 3 weeks. They just don't look put together, energetic, locked in. I mean, they haven't looked anything resembling a team that can compete for a division title or put up a fight against some of the haves in their own league. And I transport, right? What would happen if Nebraska was playing a TCU on ABC Saturday night at 7 o'clock? And I know I've been on this TCU bandwagon, but they look great for a while against Ohio State. Ohio State looks insane. Penn State toys with people, and then their offense explodes, right? SC, USC, Oregon, and Stanford, they look incredible. Fast, lean, strong, physical, tough. And I'm still searching here for Nebraska. Maybe that shows up Saturday. Am I wrong that the reset could be a reality for Nebraska on Saturday? Does it all kind of come together? Do they play fast and physical and confident and carefree and just kind of go do their thing on Saturday? They have to. That's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to do that by a snap of the finger. And I don't know if it's going to all come together, but this is a game that, yes, you have to win. You can't lose narrowly. You can't be sloppy. You can't get beat at home. You just have to win. And like Mitch Sherman was saying yesterday, it doesn't matter how it's done, whether it's a blowout, come from behind, you just beat them out, whatever it is, you have to get that dub. And no, I think one of the reasons you said you're watching it and it's a different story with TCU, when you're watching Nebraska, it's kind of like back when we'd play Wisconsin last year, the years back, they'd hand the ball off play after play after play, and you knew deep down, okay, we're never going to stop them. Even if you got on a little run, even if Nebraska got on a little run, their offense was looking better. You didn't have trust in their defense to get the run game stopped. And that's how it is on both sides of the ball right now in this season. You don't have trust in your offense to go score. You don't have trust in your defense to stop the other team from scoring, especially in those clutch moments and consistently back and back at the beginning of the game and then at the end of the game. You get a little highlights there in the middle, but... I mean, discarding Michigan, but they need to be consistent with Purdue.
No, they do. And Purdue's a like opponent, right? And that's been the hardest thing for me to grasp is where Nebraska football is, where they just truly are in the food chain. They've got some dudes that'll play on Sunday. Absolutely. They don't have a roster full of dudes that'll play on Sunday. And I know that's it's not been the 90s for a long time with depth and talent and development. But we're not that far removed from Gregory or Malik or Vincent or Will Compton or Searles or Qualley or Spencer Long or Amir or Anunua, right? Or Rex. I mean, it's not been 20 years. It's not been 15 years. They've had some talent on both sides of the ball, and they've had a collection of it all at once. Roy Helu. I mean, so right now you're just looking and searching and going, all right, do they truly reset? And Ryan Held was interesting today. This is where I want to go next with this, into this reset mantra. Back to all the things that have gone on this season. We're not even into the off-season build-up and hype since December 4th. Or the spring game. Or the talk that, hey, man, they'll be all right. They're going to win 8 games. They're going to win 7 games. To the reality of how this season started. and where this team is at between the years. That's extremely important, and it's a different, like, shell-shocked than taking over Central Florida. It's just different. And I'm not talking about expectations or job security or any of that, because they're fine, and they're going to be fine. I'm talking about the guys in the locker room needing to see results, but right now maybe it's finally sunk in that this is how you have to go about your work. And they went about their work a certain way against Colorado, almost a win. And it's Troy, where they locked in, where practice is crisp. Probably not. They weren't as dialed in because it's Troy and, well, we're Nebraska. Doesn't exist anymore. It just doesn't. And I'm finally to my knees realizing that. But no, they're not 95, they're not 97, they're not 99, they're not 01. I get it. But they are last year and this year, it's been dogfights to beat a Rutgers or an Illinois or a Purdue. There's no more gimmies. There's no more gimmies. And that, I never, ever thought I'd say that. It's the equivalent of being up in the air against the Iowa States and Kansases of the world, that we're not talking the banner years of Iowa State or Kansas under McCarney or homeboy that went to Minnesota. His name will come to me here. But Nebraska just has, they are not intimidating anymore. And I know that that's been, like, waning because people have come in here and win and won. But really, there's no fear no give a damn that, oh, you're playing Nebraska. It's a showcase. It's a cool facility. It's a great environment. But as far as the team you're playing, there's no fear. I don't care. It's a win on your schedule. People are putting W next to Nebraska, maybe in ink now, versus the other way around. But all of this has kind of culminated with what Coach Held said today about the start and really what needs to happen, and that's start off on the right foot and settle in. It sounds so stupid and simple, but it's so right.
You can go into these games and you can get either a false idea of where you're at, or maybe thinking you're better or worse than what you are. You know, when you go against each other for spring ball and all those practices and fall camp, until you can go out against somebody else. I mean, you look at Colorado game, we almost had 600 yards, probably left 150 on the table, but we turned the ball over and we gave up a special teams touchdown. Then Troy, you're playing with a backup quarterback, you know, his first start, you don't have a whole lot behind him. He gets hurt, then what do we have? So it's just one of those deals that you know, I mean, we've been put in these situations, all right? There's no excuses. We got to be able to overcome them. But at least this week now, we can go out and play, all right? We got a full loaded deck. Let's go play and see where this thing can go.
That's so right. You've got a quarterback that's, you're not wondering if Adrian's going to start or not. He's gold. You got an offensive line that really needs to respond or get out of the way. That's seniors. That's guys who've started since last year. There needs to be step up. Your best running back last week was Wyatt Mazur. He was awesome. And he should get about 20 touches on Saturday if no one else is going to step up and be explosive. And then you got a room full of wideouts that like watching Stan and JD catch everything. Wonderful. And then there's a group of tight ends that may or may not block on these constant bubble screen passes that are thrown out there. The city council in Lincoln needs to ban the bubble screen, because it's been a problem for 2 years. And what you have with Nebraska is a lot of reasons, not excuses, as to why things have gone sideways. But you can just kind of say, screw it. Time to buy in. Time to practice like a pro Monday through Thursday. Pay attention to it, not shortcut it. And fight for your life. Because if it don't happen Saturday, you're not winning at Wisconsin. Your confidence continues to, like, just dwindle and die. But the coach has got to follow through too. And I understand there's different levels of talent. I know there's bigger, faster, stronger. But if that bigger, faster, stronger is not doing the job, then it give me the effort guy who may get beat just like the guy that's bigger, faster, stronger. But at least the give-a-damn level will be higher. The attention to it. So it is a true reset Saturday. It's a reset or a replay. Another close, tough home loss to a team that you never thought you'd lose to at home. Or, hey, Nebraska gets their first win in the Scott Frost era and maybe generate some momentum to the land of fried cheese, brats, and beer. But that's kind of what's hanging in the balance. We'll hear the story of one of those guys who was part of an offensive line group that did do some positive things against Michigan. Our chat with Christian Gaylord coming up. He dropped some nuggets. You want to know why there's maybe some tentativeness about playing backup linemen? Well, guys didn't get a lot of snaps or reps the last 3 years. Hail Varsity continues.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
A few minutes here on Hail Varsity. Christian Gaylord with us. And let's talk about Saturday. And your unit got in and successful touchdown drive. But the first three quarters were extremely tough. How did you deal and cope with what went on Saturday, and then what was your mindset when you did take the field?
When I took the field, I just wanted to contribute as much as I could to getting a score. Of course, it was a pretty, I wouldn't say sad, but it was like a disappointing for us to go out and perform the way we did. But there's a lot of things that we took out of it that were positive. Just one more guy that we needed to block, then we would have sprung out for a big run, or just getting guys down, hands down. I think we can take a lot of positive from this game and roll on and go on toward Purdue and just be really, really a strong unit going into Purdue, and we're excited.
Christian Gaylord's with us here a few minutes on Hail Varsity. You can't be happy about the outcome, obviously, but there are things you need to look forward in moments like that, correct, that you can build on. And how's Coach Austin in the group, that offensive line group? What steps have you seen so far to rebound?
Well, we're always prepared to rebound. Even if we do well, we're just going to look at what we did well and continue to do that. Of course, it was a rough game, but we want to take everything that we can learn from that game and build upon it. Coach Austin's always teaching us technique and footwork, and he's always telling us what we could do better and like the small details. And I think that's one of the best things that he can do, is just details leads to bigger aspects of the game. And even when I did get in the game, I tried to focus on those details because I wanted it to be as physical as I could be and just have fun doing it, because it was quite a while since I was able to get in a game like that. And being able to be in that game, it was a reminder how much I love this game and how much I want to give towards this game.
You've had to grind quite a bit. You're a junior. You're a guy that's in the mix, and you're striving for more playing time. Take me through a bit of your journey, how you've stayed with it, how you've stayed hungry, and you've stayed optimistic. Because, again, when kind of your offensive line group was in, really well done against Michigan. Missouri got loose. You got the touchdown on the board. That's all positive.
Mm-hmm. It's very positive. And actually, Missouri is my roommate. So I was a little bit excited when he got in there, and I was able to get a block for him to get in. But my journey's been interesting. It's been full of roughs, full of downs. But at the same time, I've always prayed to God, and I hope that he has me on the right path, and I feel like he has. Because there's been many times where I'm like, well, should I go somewhere else? Should I continue my career somewhere else? But I'm glad I've been able to stay here, because this coaching staff is putting us in the right direction. and I'm incredibly blessed to be a part of it and just to be at the start of something great, because this year we're going to get better. Next year is going to be, it's going to be a ride. It's going to be a lot of fun. But right now we're looking at this as, oh, we're going to attack Purdue, and we're just going to go out there and be as physical as possible.
How much back and forth has happened with you as far as thinking about going elsewhere to play and staying? What ultimately has made you stay? Can you circle one thing or another?
I grew up a Nebraska fan, so I've always think that, like, my family, we're not quitters. We always continue and to strive and to grind. Even with high school, I've always been a pretty big kid, but I was tall and lanky, but I viewed it as like I could put some muscle on, put some meat on, and I could use my size to my advantage. And even going to college, I am decently tall, but at the same time, it's not high school. I still need to put on muscle mass and get stronger, and I need to have the mentality of a dog and go out there and be as physical as possible, which I still feel like I need to continue on. And even when I do get out there to contribute to the team, I need to be a dog and be as physical as possible.
That, from a mentality standpoint, I remember talking to you during signing day, and the attitude was you were one of those dudes that were kind of a throwback where you loved mixing it up on the line of scrimmage. That's a strength of yours, is the physical part. From the finer point aspects, the technique side, what's that been like for you with all the transition that's gone on since you started at Nebraska?
Well, it's been different. So with the pass sets, I feel like over the past 3 years, I've developed my pass set a lot more from where it used to be. And having the mentality of being an animal and being as physical as possible, that's been difficult for me. Just because you need to do in, rep in and rep out, and I can't take plays off when, even in practice, like, you need to go in and be as physical as possible. And sometimes that's difficult to do, but having that mentality of, like, okay, I need to do this, and over again, so I can get that look from a coach and be like, yeah, he is putting in the work. And I feel like I have been doing that, but I just need to continue to do that.
What feedback have you gotten from your peers or from Coach Austin?
My peers have been telling me that I have taken a major step from last year with the old coaching staff. I didn't get as many looks as I did.
Let me interrupt you for a sec. Did you get much practice time last year?
No, I did not. I probably only got maybe 5 reps of practice, but that's in the past. I'm not looking at the past anymore. So, like, with now, like, I'm getting many more reps, as you have heard and seen, and it's a lot more enjoyable, I would say. I mean, this is probably the first time I've actually enjoyed putting on the helmet and going and smacking somebody for quite a while, and I'm just blessed that, you know, I've had this opportunity that I've had.
Couple more minutes. Christian Gaylord's with us here on Hail Varsity. So who kind of woke up that love for the game again?
I'd say Coach Austin woke it up again. He gave me the opportunity just to go out there and play with no fear of failure. And with this old coaching staff, I was scared to fail, because if I only got 5 reps, if I had a mishap in a rep, that's like my whole practice and my confidence would be shocked. And that developed a high-level anxiety with these old coaches. And that's something I've had to deal with. Like, I meditate, I pray, and to go out there and just have a mindset where I'm like, okay, we're going to do this. I'm all right. Let's get this done. And I think Coach Austin has developed that out of me, and I just want to continue to prove to him that I am a good player, and I will do whatever I can to help contribute to this team.
Is confidence as a whole something that has been addressed by the coaching staff after Saturday, or are guys still confident that, all right, there is bigger and better out there? I'm not saying if guys checked out. I'm just saying it's been a while since this team has won.
I mean, we're always confident. I mean, the way the year started out, it's you can say that, you know, it wasn't the best for us, but we always need to come out and have the drive of like, yes, we're a Big Ten team. We're Nebraska. There's so much tradition here, and we're lucky to put that N on our chest and be like, this is us. So yes, it's not really that we don't have confidence, but we just need to get that first win and to get this thing rolling, because once this thing starts rolling, once this train rolls, there's no way you can stop it.
What do you love most about the offense?
It's fast. So back in my high school, we ran a really up-tempo offense. And so it's a lot of fun just going back to not really my roots, but just like being a part of it again.
Too familiar?
It's really familiar to me. And it's a lot of fun just like getting that up-tempo and catching defensive off their feet. But one thing we need to continue to work on is getting that tempo going and move it faster, because there's times when we're not moving as fast as we want to. But we can, and I feel like we can catch a lot of teams off their feet.
Coach Frost has mentioned that practices aren't as consistent maybe as he wants, and he touched in the post game on last Thursday's practice. What do you think's missing in practice, and how close are you guys to maybe hitting that mark that's more acceptable to him?
What is missing? I think what's missing is just the mentality of, okay, I'm a little tired, but that's all right. Because if I'm tired, then the defense that we're going against is going to be way more tired, because they're not used to that tempo and that speed that we have. So I think what's missing is that we need to continue with that up-tempo and just to finish our blocks as well. I feel like we're going to be very prepared going into this weekend. We're very excited to play Purdue, because Purdue is a great team. They beat Boston College. And we don't look past any team. And we're just going to go out there and have a great mentality of, like, we're going to go out there and give it to them.
Last thought, Christian. So fair to say spirits are okay, mm-hmm, heading into Nebraska and Purdue this weekend?
Mm-hmm. Spirits are high. We're always a positive team. We love our brothers. We're always going to be there for each other. Even if we harp on one another, it's just because we care. And we just want everybody on this team to buy in, just go out there and play as hard as we can.
Has there been question of that? I mean, it's been brought up, yeah, but from your aspect, from your view, is buy-in more about just doing the little things versus the big picture?
I'd say it's the small details, because the details that are small lead up to something bigger. But we're accountable for each other. We're going to continue to get our brothers into, you know, where they need to be, like whether it's class or a meal. That's small details, and that leads onto the field. So just being able to get those details cleaned up, I think it's going to be a lot better for the team as a whole.
Christian, best of luck this weekend. Thanks.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Good to hear from Christian Gaylord. Pride of Baldwin City, Kansas, junior. And we'll see if he makes a push for more time on the offensive line. He has been pretty honest about his journey. 5 reps of practice last year and in previous years. That does not develop depth on an offensive line. The laws of physics apply to whenever you're in a vehicle. Your body's traveling the same speed as that vehicle, even though you're sitting on your butt. And if that vehicle stops abruptly, well, you're going to crash. Something's got to stop that motion. Airbags aren't enough. The seatbelt is what comes to the rescue. Do you want the seatbelt to stop you or the windshield? Buckle up. Click it or ticket now. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. Mike Shuhart, Shuey, coming up next with Hail Varsity.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
We'll get into this Kelly Bryant discussion as he is bolting Clemson. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke, the Pride of Chicago. Great to have you back, Hail Varsity Radio. Time for the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. It is 5 o'clock somewhere, and how about happy hour? Perfect time. It precludes me, unless I just do a roadie out at Wilderness. But it's 5 o'clock somewhere. Start your week off right. Gather your coworkers. Join Wilderness Ridge at the grill for happy hour 4 to 6. and enjoy discounted drinks. 50% off select appetizers. Happy hour 4 to 6 daily. That makes me happy. 50% off select starters, $1 off well drinks, draft beer, domestic bottle beer, and $2 off the house wine. Stop on by. Go see your friends at Wilderness Ridge. Get that tee time locked in. Going to be a night game for Wisconsin. That screams to me golf during the day.
Yes.
And can dial up 402-434-5106, wildernessridgegolf.com. Or get that dinner reservation, 402-434-5118. Mike Shewhart, Shuey is in studio. Shuey, how are you?
I'm doing great. Beautiful day.
I've missed you. Yes, you've been doing lessons all day out at Wilderness.
Yeah, man. Nice day out there.
It's beautiful. 71, yeah. Sunshine. Mm-hmm. Danny was thinking about trying to hustle me at some point for some golf outing.
Keep working on him. You'll get him.
No, I'm not going to play Danny. I think Danny's way, way, way more talented than he's letting on.
In he's golf. One of those guys.
I get lucky from time to time.
Uh-huh. Oh, right. Yeah, he's definitely one of those guys.
Exactly.
Oh, I never hit one that far before in my life.
The approach shot. Tiger Woods.
Wow.
Speak to me about Tiger. And can you parallel Nebraska football and Tiger Woods at all?
I can, actually.
Okay.
Everybody wrote him off.
Mm-hmm.
He's done. He's never going to play again, me included. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I didn't think he would ever win again.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of wrote him off, and look what he's done. You know, he's put in the work and done a lot of things and overcome a lot of adversity and put himself in position, and he won. It's an amazing feat. Something I never thought I'd see happen, but it's very much the same. It's like when you get written off, it's like, what do? You either quit or you keep grinding,
mm-hmm.
You know, and you keep grinding for a bunch of reasons. You keep grinding to prove people wrong. You keep grinding for your own personal kind of goals that you have, you know, and those goals continue to change. And just like Tiger never thought he didn't think he would ever play golf again. So, starting to get back into it, starting to do a little bit. It's like, you know, I can play golf. Again, never thought he would be able to contend. Well, all of a sudden, as he kept going, you know, he started to contend. Never really thought he would win, but, you know, as success breeds success, changes your mindset a little bit, changes your goals a little bit, and your belief in your goals. You know, I mean, how can a guy that doesn't think he's ever going to play golf again think he's ever going to win the tour championship? It's like, I mean, those two don't go together. So it takes a process to be able to do that. So, you know, I look at Nebraska, where are they at right now? I mean, they're
over, babe.
Yeah, they're over. But they're
same. It's going to be the same approach.
It has to
get back, right?
You know, and man, you got guys that are they're still learning. You know, it's like. And it's not just one guy. That's the difference. I mean, golf is a little bit different because it's just one guy. I mean, out there, it has to be 11 guys in sync with one another doing what it is they need to be doing at all times. Not just one guy, not just three guys. You can have 10 guys do the right job and one guy doesn't do the right job, and it's a failure.
It's a touchdown.
Yeah. So it's like they're still learning. I mean, I give those guys I give them a break because it's like they've been through so many different coaching staffs and learnings and trying to learn this and trying to learn that. I mean, you just don't learn how to play golf and win a championship in a day. You know, it takes years. It takes a long time to be able to do that. So these guys have done it one time, essentially. Not even a year they've been in the system with him. So they're still just learning what it is. Some guys catch on, easier for them to do. Some guys a little slower. And then all of a sudden you get in the game and things start to happen a little bit different. So it's like then you get hesitant because you're trying to do the right thing. Trying to do the right thing makes you slower.
Sure. You're thinking.
Overthinking, making sure you do the right thing, blah, so on and so forth. And it's like you need time to be together, to repetition and keep continuing to become a collective unit that doesn't have to think. I mean, I listen to the interviews and talk, and it's like, quit making mistakes. It's like, man, if you're out playing, if I'm playing golf to not make a mistake, I'm going to make a whole lot of them.
Right. You're gripping it too hard.
You know, so
right.
It's like, don't. Well, don't. That means that's what you're going to do. Your brain is an amazing computer, you know, and it's like whatever you put input into the computer, it's trying to produce. Don't what? Don't do this. Don't do this. Well, your brain can't decipher between don't, good, bad, this and that. It's going, don't hit it in the water. Well, it's going
drink
there,
a drink.
There's the water, man. So it's basically, it's interpreting as hit it right in the water because you're telling yourself the ball's flying in the water. So it's like, it's the same deal. So it's like,
Danny, don't take Minnesota and give the points.
So, you know, and again, you need some success helps a lot because it starts to prove that.
Reinforces.
Yeah, what you're doing works. What you're doing works. So it's like sometimes you got to have a lot of blind faith into something, you know. And from what I hear, read the players, it's like they do. They believe a lot in the coaching staff, just like listening to Gaylord, you know. I mean, his love for the game came back because of who? Because of Austin. So it's like he's teaching him a certain belief system, and it's like, are they reaping the rewards of it? Heck no. But he still believes in the process of where they're going, what they can do. And that's hugely important, you know, because it's like it's hard to believe in something if you're getting the opposite results.
Right.
You know, it's like, man, you can shoot 65 every time you tee it up. Well, just got done. What'd you shoot? 85. So what am I? Am I 65 or am I 85? Well, you shoot 85 enough times, it's pretty hard to think you're 65.
Because you did it once.
Yeah. So, but it's like you are because
I
want to
shoot 85 once shooting.
You know, so if you can continue to do it and have some success, then you start, that's who I am, you know. Instead of just hoping for it, you truly believe that it is what's going to happen. So,
Chewy, we'll get more into the Ryder Cup here next segment. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, Mike Shewhart in studio. It's a Wednesday with Chewy. What Tiger are we going to see? You've got confidence, you got to win. I mean, we're talking momentum with a capital M here for the U.S. and Tiger,
yeah,
I would think, right?
You're going to see a very confident Tiger, especially because of the format. He has a partner now, so it's – I don't want to say it's a little lower key, but it is because you got a partner that you're playing with.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to be a little more freelancy.
Sure.
At times when you do that, instead of just you on your own having
there's
to
some
manipulate,
margin for error.
You get a little margin for error, you know, and it takes a little pressure off your partner at times, though, and takes pressure off him.
Or puts it on him.
So it's just getting him the right guy.
We'll talk Ryder Cup, Tiger, the U.S., Bubba. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
10 minutes away, Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider College Game Day. We'll talk weekend matchups, his thoughts on Nebraska, as Mike Shewhart. Shewy is in Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. The last time Bubba Watson was in Paris, there was an uproar due to poor play, his references to several French landmarks. I don't even know if he did the old mayonnaise and French fry thing, but he learned from the experience. Bubba, the U.S., the Ryder Cup, handicap this for me, Shewy. What needs to happen? What do you think will happen for the United States as they try and get a road win?
1993.
Okay.
That's the last time the U.S. won on European soil.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
That is.
So, I mean, they're going to have their hands full. So it should be really exciting, man. Both teams are really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
strengths of the United States, strengths of Europe.
You know, Europe obviously being at home. You
so
know,
they know the course.
And
have you played this course?
No. Looks beautiful on TV.
Sure.
How about
does.
Those grandstands around that first tee?
Mm-hmm.
It's like crazy. It's like that'd be really, I'd be a little nervous being all the way at the top, but it looks fantastic. The European team is pretty young. They have a lot of guys that are pretty young. That's why his captain's picks, I think, were a lot more veteran guys,
mm-hmm.
you know. So you need some of that in there with some youth. I don't know. I think if the U.S. plays, if they just play like they're capable of playing, they should be okay.
Sure.
You know, but it's such a momentum type of a game. You get one guy starting to roll in some putts and doing this, and it just pulls everybody else along with them, you know, and you're going to have they're going to have the home crowd over there. I mean, I like the U.S. team. It's really good, and they've been playing pretty well going up into it, you know.
Do you have a good, for lack of a better term, an X factor?
Yeah, I think a couple of the unknown U.S. guys are going to do a lot better than you think. Like a Webb Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that dude's played some phenomenal golf all year, you know. So do you anticipate him continuing to do that? You hope he does, just because he's done it
mm-hmm.
week after week after week. But again, this is a Ryder Cup, man. It's a whole different thing. It's his first Ryder Cup. You got a Tony Finau type of guy. But I think those guys will rise to the occasion and just play like they have, you know. Make sure you pair Tiger with Rory, because Rory doesn't fare very well when he plays with Tiger. He never has.
And that's your setup?
Yeah, he never has. I mean, he's intimidated by the guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
They played together the last round, man. He shot 4 over.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you go back and you look, every time Tiger's pairs Rory, Rory does not fare very well. You know, so I think it's one of those things that he looks at
him. Kind of an idol thing?
No, nah, I don't know that. Even. But he's not. You know, he's like, I want to be. He was
I'm
like
as good
the
as
next
you, Tiger.
Yeah, unfortunately,
Tiger's like, no, bro, you're
not even close.
No.
So he's like tries too hard or whatever, or he's just
trying to do too much.
Yeah, he just doesn't play well when he's with him. One of those things.
All right.
So you definitely won't see Phil and Tiger paired together.
No,
that's already been said.
You tell me about 20 seconds here as we right off to the sunset in hour one. Folks can come see you. Can come see Chris. Lessons.
Yeah.
Fall golf's wonderful out of Wilderness.
Yep. Got everything. Just got done with a fitting day. The new Titleist driver's out, so we had a fitting.
That would help me.
We had a fitting day yesterday. It went really well.
Good.
Yeah.
Go see Shuey. Go see Chris Thompson, WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Get a tee time. Enjoy beautiful fall golf. Enjoy the deck. Enjoy Wilderness. Brad Edwards coming up.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you. It's Hour 2. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke, Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf. He's sitting in, hanging out. We welcome in ESPN Insider, College Game Day with ESPN.com and Magazine. It is Brad Edwards. Brad, how are you, sir?
Doing great. Had a little bit busier Wednesday than usual with all the news out of Clemson, but excited for a big weekend of college football.
Yeah, let's start there with Clemson and with Kelly Bryant and Dabo. And is there a bad guy in this, or do you see all sides?
I see all sides. I certainly understand Kelly Bryant's side. I even understand how he feels a little bit betrayed. I think he said it feels like a slap in the face. I completely understand why, you know, given that he has only one season left to play college football, maybe in his life he might not be an NFL prospect. That's for other people to decide. I get why he doesn't want to spend the rest of his football career standing on the sideline watching other people play. It's just the nature of being quarterback. So that makes sense. On the other side, I applaud Dabo for doing what he did this week and not waiting until next week when it was too late for Kelly Bryant to make a move, had he chosen to do so. Obviously, he did choose to do so. Because what he did was, in one way, the best thing for the program. I think the decision to go with Trevor Lawrence is the best thing for the team. It's going to give them the best chance to win the national championship when we get to the end of the year. But doing it at the time that he did it and allowing Kelly Bryant to leave is not what was best for Clemson. They don't have an insurance policy, an experienced backup at quarterback anymore. So I think everybody did what they judged to be right for their particular situation and given who they're responsible to. And I can't make any complaints about someone doing the wrong thing, but it's obviously not a situation that most schools would like to be in.
No, it's difficult. Nebraska had a unique situation where it wasn't in season, it wasn't four games in, but you had Jebbia leave after he didn't win the job, and you saw how things have shaken out for Nebraska with the backup quarterback spot. It looked a little better because the backup quarterback scored, you know, got Nebraska their only touchdown, their only 10 points last week against Michigan. But just the grand scheme, the 30,000 foot view here of the redshirt rule, the quarterback situation and position, and coaches in college football, do you think they'll push for maybe to pump the brakes on this redshirt rule, or is this kind of just the price of doing business to have an opportunity to test drive for four games and then redshirt? I mean, the quarterback spot is what I'm concerned most with, because that is the – we're in the era of the quarterback transfer.
Yeah, I think that if the coaches had it to do over again, there might be some that would want to maybe – amend the rule a little bit, maybe say, okay, it's only for freshmen that you can play in four games and still redshirt. That's one possible change they can make. But I think all in all, most coaches would be willing to take something like this happening. And look, I don't think this is going to be an every year occurrence for every program. I think most programs, maybe 1 out of 5 years, will have to deal with something like this with maybe one possibly two players at the most. I think looking at it that way, with the other side being the benefit of being able to get some late season playing time for guys who have redshirted, I think the coaches would take the trade-off. I think they all acknowledge that it's in everyone's best interest to, you know, to give more power, more flexibility, leverage, whatever you want to call it, to the players, as far as you know, what control they have over their college careers. And so I don't think that they would abolish this rule if they had to do over. I think they're willing to accept the bad with the good, and I think the coaches would still tell you there's more good that comes from this than bad.
Brad, after finishing watching Nebraska and Michigan last weekend, based on both teams' performance, which team told you more about the direction of their season? What left more of an impact on you? Was it Nebraska's performance or Michigan?
For me, it was Nebraska. I'm while I am more optimistic about Michigan, I'm still not sure, because the week before I saw them, you know, be really sloppy. I don't want to say struggle, but they were not impressive against SMU. So I don't know what to make of Michigan. I do, after watching Nebraska, really start to wonder, is Colorado any good? I think that maybe I had a false impression of a level of improvement by Nebraska based on thinking that Colorado was better. We'll see over the next few weeks. But certainly my big takeaway was that for Nebraska, man, they are going to really have their work cut out for them in order to get bowl eligible. That obviously a situation like this with a first-year coach, a true freshman quarterback, the more reps you can get, the more games you can play, the better it is for everyone to get to where you want to be. But that's going to be a tough one for Nebraska to be able to get to six wins. They're going to have to pull an upset now. The Michigan game didn't really change that, but it made me less optimistic that they're going to be good enough to pull an upset in one of these games. And, of course, I mean, first order of business is, don't lose to Purdue, because that puts you in a bigger hole.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, we don't know what Nebraska we're going to see Saturday. I know Purdue's limped in, but they've been close, right? They could be 3-1. Nebraska could be 3-1. You have a tale of two teams here that have gotten off to horrible starts, but you can talk yourself into flipping the record around with them. The thing that blew me away is, and I knew Michigan's defense was going to be insane. I mean, it's that good, it's that loaded, it's that talented. But just from a physicality standpoint, Nebraska's offensive line looked so far down the rung compared to what Michigan had on the defensive side. And then Nebraska's defense, by all accounts, people I talked to in Michigan, this is an average Michigan offensive line.
Yeah.
They got drilled for 300 yards. I don't know if it was the stage combined with the avalanche or what, but I mean, Nebraska's not done well on a stage like that for a long time. And then they haven't tasted success forever. I mean, they've lost seven straight games, Brad.
Yeah, look, I was watching the game with Trevor Maddich, who has done many breakdowns the last couple of years on the Michigan offensive line, and his initial reaction to, I don't know, the first 10 minutes or so of that game, as we were watching it while we were on the radio, was a shock in that he said, I can't believe I'm seeing Michigan's offensive line actually look like a legitimate offensive line. It's the way they're pushing Nebraska around. And so that's the question. Is Michigan better on the O-line? Have they gotten better in just, you know, a couple weeks? Or does Nebraska really have that far to go? Now, look, in the Colorado game, the encouraging thing that we saw from the Nebraska defense was the sacks. Mm-hmm. It was the pressure in the backfield. But they still, all in all, left a lot to be desired in some facets of play on the defensive lines. It wasn't like they had looked really great. It was just that they had gotten a lot of pressure on the quarterback. So, I don't know, maybe, like I said, maybe we read too much into the Colorado game. It may turn out that Colorado's a very average team. But what we do know, once again, is that Nebraska is going to have to win at least one game that no one's expecting them to win if they're going to find a way to get to a bowl this year.
Well, they got to start with a win, period, and should be a pretty good ball game. How do you see Purdue-Nebraska? Do you see this thing being 35-31, that type of ball game?
You know, I still think that Nebraska's offense should be capable of scoring a lot of points on Purdue. You know, Purdue's offense, I think we've all seen, is explosive, and especially that freshman receiver, and they should get their share of points too. So I think it's going to be it's a matter of Nebraska finding a way to get some stops, whether they're forcing punts or just forcing turnovers. Gotta find a way to keep Purdue out of the end zone, and obviously a lot of improvement they have to make on offense. The good news is this Purdue defense is not in the caliber, not the same caliber, not in the same class as the Michigan group that they just faced. So it is a look. It's a big leap from how they looked last week to actually winning a conference game against a decent team. But I give them a shot. But this game feels. It feels 50-50 to me, whereas before the season started, I would have said it feels like 75% Nebraska win.
Brad, I want to move on to some games this upcoming week, and I want to get your thoughts here on Stanford and Notre Dame in South Bend. The Irish are 5.5-point favorites. Stanford came back against Oregon. Notre Dame hasn't really had too much competition besides Michigan, so who do you like this Saturday?
Yeah, I like Notre Dame a lot in this game just because – I guess there are two reasons. Let me start with the Stanford side of it, which is that this is a really tough ask for a team to play back-to-back road games against quality opponents. And Stanford was very fortunate to get out of Oregon with a win last weekend, and to do that on the road, you know, travel back home, and then have to go on a trip more than halfway across the country this week. That's a tough assignment in itself. On top of it, Stanford is not as good as its ranking. I think most people would say that. You know, you think about what we expected them to be. They are not running the ball very well, even though we know they have one of the best running backs in the country, so they have some flaws. And Notre Dame up front defensively is good enough to cause them to continue to struggle running the ball. And then, of course, last week we saw Notre Dame have some success throwing the ball with the quarterback change, and I think that adds a new dimension to their offense. So I think the combination of Notre Dame playing better than Stanford right now and being at home, Stanford, you know, having this difficult back-to-back, everything sets up for Notre Dame. And so I like Notre Dame to win this game, and for those who have not looked at the schedule, I think it is worth pointing out there is one current AP Top 25 team on Notre Dame's remaining schedule, and that is Stanford. And if they get through this game, I'm not saying they will go undefeated or that that would be the expectation, but compared to what other playoff contenders have left on the schedule in October and November, it's some pretty light lifting for Notre Dame, relative to what the others have.
So the world now becomes USC fans later in the year if you're not a Notre Dame
fan. Yeah, although, you know what, Chris, like I made the point in our podcast this week, as did Matt Schick, that if you just love college football and you love the drama that typically comes with the season, you might want to just swallow that hatred for Notre Dame and start rooting for them, because if Notre Dame's undefeated, then all of a sudden, you know, teams like Alabama and Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, whatever, they don't have that margin for error that, you know, in past years we've always seen, where you can lose a game in conference, and as long as you're a one-loss conference champ, you're probably going to get in. If there's an undefeated Notre Dame out there, they're getting in the playoff. Yep. There's no question about that. And so that takes up one of those spots, which means that someone else might not be able to afford the loss, which is, you know, if nothing else, it would make, you know, Championship Saturday more interesting. And so I think if you love what we typically have as far as drama in the final weeks of the season, root for Notre Dame, because they might be the only hope for us to have drama before we get to the playoff.
Yep. Brad, about 90 seconds. How you feeling about Ohio State, Penn State, and where are you guys at this weekend?
We're going to be in Bristol again. I like the Buckeyes because I have major questions about Penn State's rush defense. And right. We know what Ohio State has in the offensive line, what they have at running back. I think they should be able to have a lot of success there. And Dwayne Haskins is so much more accurate down the field than JT Barrett was, that if you're Penn State and your solution is to try to move guys up into the box, move safeties up to, you know, help support against the run, you're really exposing yourself on the back end to big plays because of Haskins. And so I think it's a fascinating chess match. I still give Penn State a good chance to win the game because they have that crowd. They have Sorley. They have really excelled in this game the last 2 years on special teams. So I think it should be a great game. Ohio State's the better team, but that doesn't always mean they win the game.
Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider College Game Day, ESPN Radio and Magazine, at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. Brad, a lot of fun to talk this week, man. Thanks for squeezing us in, and we'll run you down next week. Appreciate you.
All right. Thank you, guys. Enjoy the game this week.
Will do. Take care. Brad Edwards, thoughts on the weekend of college football. Yeah, that Penn State rush defense is garbage. But 108,000, Beaver Stadium, wide out, kick-started the Penn State program year three under Franklin. Look where they're at now. Didn't hurt having McSorley and Saquon for a couple years. That'll be awesome. That'll be an incredible ball game, night game, Saturday. So when you get done watching Nebraska outlast Purdue, you've got Notre Dame, Stanford, Penn State, Ohio State to kick it. That'll be good. We'll talk Kelly Bryant and Clemson. If you didn't hear what Paul Feinbaum said about Nebraska and Coach Frost, we'll have that for you next. And we'll dive in. You know what Saturday is shaping up to be? Say it with me. Must win. 466-3776 can dial us up on Hail Varsity.
Now live from the ESPN Lincoln Studios, it's Hail Varsity.
I know what that means.
With Chris Mann and Danny Burke.
Open phone segment for you, 466-377-6800, 825-5865, Chris Mann, Danny Burke. Big thanks to Brad Edwards and Christian Gaylord, Husker offensive tackle last hour. Mike Shewhart was fun to have a lot of golf talk with. So we can get into some Kelly Bryant thoughts in a moment. And the quarterback climate in the college football world. And you as a Nebraska fan know how you felt when Jebbia bounced. Think about Clemson fan, a guy that's 12-2, was patient, now has left, and got beat out. So let's make that very, very clear. Got beat out. Offense wasn't as good as it was with this phenom, Trevor Lawrence. Clemson's been really, really awesome at recruiting quarterbacks. They had one kid that's now at Northwestern, and then you have a guy that's 12-2 and took the college football playoff. He's not Deshaun Watson. That's his biggest problem, and Kelly Bryant. But you got Trevor Lawrence. So is that chicken bleep for Kelly Bryant to leave four games in? Here's like the ultimate scenario. You stay with your team, but you don't play, so you preserve the red shirt, and then you grad transfer next year. So that way, you're still there for your team if Bryant, or I should say if Trevor Lawrence is ineffective, or, oh yeah, remembers he's a freshman. Now, Dabo was very, very honorable in setting this up for the kid to, if you love him, you'll set him free type thing. So that's stand up by Dabo. And I had a buddy text me from back east last night. It's like, should Nebraska jump into the quarterback transfer market? A Kelly Bryant or a Jalen Hurts? And I'm like, look, man, I think Adrian's pretty talented. I think the kids they're recruiting are super talented. The problem with Bryant and Jalen Hurts has been their accuracy, and that's kind of, I don't know, very big and key for this Nebraska offense.
You're also going to have to restart trying to develop him in this regard.
And if he doesn't win the job, is he going to be a pain in the ass in the locker room?
Right. All the work you've done with Adrian, you give him this whole first year, then he'll be really ready to go next year. You don't want to just bring in a new guy who may or may not be a perfect fit under this coaching staff, depending on if they can.
Well, and they didn't go after Joe Burrow.
Right.
I mean, they're trying to do by right the kids that committed to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you need upgrade at talent. I know you need competition at positions. But I think I think Nebraska's fine at quarterback. I think they're fine now. I think they're going to be fine in future years to groom and develop and then ultimately go on that Mack Brown run, right? Like where you're stacking quarterback after quarterback after quarterback, or better yet, that Tom Osborne run where you're going Turner Gill, Steve Taylor, right? Or you're going Tommy Frazier, Brooke Behringer, Scott Frost, Eric Crouch. I mean, that's what you want, just to be able to just bring in the next and hope he's as good as a prior. Here is Paul Feinbaum with Mike Greenberg this morning. Nebraska came up.
The most disappointing team in college football right now is?
It's a long list of people. I will go with Nebraska. You expected more. Scott Frost is a prodigal son. He won the championship there. He was the hottest coach in the offseason, and that team has just been a disaster. Every week he says, we're going to learn from this. What are you going to learn? Your team is terrible. That's not entirely on him, but he has to show something. He has capital, though. Some of the other coaches around college football who are 0 for the season do not.
Let's stir the meth lab up for a potential explosion here, Paul. Is the team playing bad? Yes. Did we all jump in on expectations? Guilty as charged. But don't crucify him on national television and then pump the brakes a bit by saying, well, it's not all his fault. So which is it? Is it his fault that they're 0-3? Well, he's a head coach. What type of mess did he inherit? I think it's very clear where, just from a depth and a development standpoint, brother, Christian Gaylord said it an hour ago, 5 reps of practice, that's your backup left tackle. You have 4 practices a week, assuming that grandpa didn't take him for Werther's and ice cream. That's maybe 100 reps a year. I don't know. Feinbaum's stirring it up. Has Nebraska lived up to expectations? No. Will they get better? Yes. Define better? Can't do it. Better's better than what they did against Michigan. Saturdays need to look like the first half of the Colorado game moving forward. Jack's with us on Hail Varsity. Jack, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Feinbaum, I've never been a fan of his, but I understand what he's saying, but he was also on the radio yesterday, and he kind of went up with it because he talked to Goldberg or whatever, Golick. yesterday.
Sure.
And he was talking and said kind of the same thing, but then today he kind of upped it and went a little bit more into it with Frost and not living up. And I would just say, you know, Nebraska, the cupboard is very bare from what was there. You know, the teams we've played, they're not Northeast Alaska State. They're teams you've heard of. They've got talent. They're there. They can win any given Saturday. And, you know, the nice thing about having a bare cupboard, Frost can fill it with what he wants.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's going to be the plan. And, Jack, thanks for calling. Appreciate you tuning in. No, and that's what makes Saturday so important. Because the groceries you do have can feed you. But they also may be expired. So you go with some fresher groceries. And if they don't beat Purdue, give me a full-on youth movement. If you're at 0-4, take your lumps with your freshmen or your sophomores or your backups. Because you're going into game four, and if things continue to be guys won't do it or can't do it, you got to find guys that can do it and will do it. It just, the varying levels of ability is what's holding you back.
Not to think too far ahead, but imagine if Nebraska loses this weekend, whether it be by a little, heartbreaking, or a lot, they're going to have absolutely no confidence going into Wisconsin.
If they get blown out, is that on your radar? Like, Nebraska gets worked by 20?
It shouldn't be.
No, it shouldn't be, but, I mean, am I nuts to think that this team's needed some couch time the last 3 weeks?
The only way that could be on the radar is if we have a devastating first half like Nebraska has these first few games.
I mean, if history repeats itself?
Yeah, exactly. But it's just hard to imagine they would
again. If they get blown out, they will have officially, like, quit on the guy.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
There can't be too much of an argument to disagree with that.
And then he goes scorched earth. But that comes down to, like, pure and internal leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Seniors and captains need to step forward. And I'm not saying that anyone has thrown in the old towel. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying they got to come out like their scholarship check depends on it. Oh, wait.
Right.
They need to go win this game. Purdue and Nebraska, very similar. Very similar. Purdue hasn't been destroyed by anybody, and they did beat a ranked team at home. But there's been...
They also got beat at home, which is...
There's been some... Yeah, you lose to Northwestern. That looks worse every week.
Mm-hmm. Northwestern's kind of got the bad end of the stick, though, this season as well.
No, so. I know. You've just got a mess with some teams that... They've got some dudes, but just from a top to bottom, do you have 50 fellas? No, is the answer. And I don't know that Nebraska does either. I am so, so intrigued to see the offensive line. And the guys have a response, and by all accounts, it's been a good week of practice. Guys are stepping up. Good. Because your offensive line needs to be big time. Not having Mick is going to suck, but you have some guys that have some talent to play and fill in for him. You're deep at the defensive line spot. If I'm a defender, I'm out to hurt. Because I got embarrassed, I got owned, I got dishonored.
It's got to be personal for these
guys. By a bad offensive line, or an okay offensive line, but bad by Michigan standards.
They have to take this to heart. I mean, I guess you could understand going into the Big House against a top-notch team like Michigan. Sure, you might get smacked around, but you have to take this absolutely personal, and it's got to be on everybody's shoulders against Purdue at home going in winless. This has to be personal for every single player out there with the name on their jersey, their families, the school, the state, everything.
I get it, but you, at some point, if you're Frost, you can't. You're in charge. You're the coach. At some point, it's got to matter to them as much as it matters to him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's going to work with you. He's going to coach you. He's going to make you better. You got to be able to do and receive that tutoring and really put the work in and realize, like what Chewy was saying, man, is that the process is real. And it may not be spectacular, but you realize it's so necessary by the end of the journey. And guys got they've had two really brutal wake-up calls. We're Nebraska, you're Troy, and oh God, it's Michigan, they're going to murder us. So now what do you do about that? Oh yeah, almost beat Colorado. You have a chance to respond. And that's what they've been doing according to practice. This is going to be the biggest key to Saturday for Nebraska. And it is about confidence. It is about good vibes. It's about taking that right step forward and not twisting your ankle, taking that right step sideways or back.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, anytime you play from behind against the defenses we're playing against, you know, it puts us in a tough situation. You know, we want to run the ball, and sometimes when you get behind, it's hard to consistently run the ball. And so one of the objectives this week is to play fast and to start fast. We can't get behind 14-17. We got to score on the opening drive, and we've kind of tried to simulate that in practice in terms of our first period out the gate has been a tempo against the defense. So the guys understand we've got to come out ready to play and we got to start fast.
That is so accurate. It's not that they can't win if they don't jump up 7-0, but it can't be 10 rip. It can't be 14-0. It can't be 21 rip. I mean, they can't do it. That's so obvious, but it's been such a chore for them. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, how you doing?
I'm great, Chris. How are you guys?
We're doing a lot better than the Chip, the Colorado Buffalo mascot. Wow.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That is a tough one. I'm glad that's a little bit outside of my orthopedic specialty.
And yes, the old T-shirt gun below the belt, and he got carted off, correct?
He sure did. Yeah, they had a whole sports medicine staff activation there. That's pretty tough.
Well, it couldn't have happened to a bigger jerk mascot-wise, just from my run-ins with Chip the Buffalo. But that was good. Not so good if you're a Jimmy G fan for the Niners. Truth be told, he helped us win fantasy last year when we started him a couple of times, and it worked out. But, man, tough news for Jimmy G against the Chiefs. As the hope of San Francisco is now out for the year with an ACL that was confirmed by MRI this week. What's Jimmy G facing here as he tries to make his comeback?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, huge loss for the Niners. What a nice player. Going to do a good job for him. But what he's looking at, pretty long recovery. As we've seen over the last several ACL injuries in the NFL, definitely taking a little bit more time to allow them to recover. Clearly having this injury this early in the season is going to give him a lot of time to get ready for next year. But he's probably looking at, one of those 8 to 9 month recoveries, maybe almost a year. They may kind of pull a similar thing with him as they've done with Carson Wentz. But he's basically got a pretty long recovery. Right now what they're doing is just kind of managing the soft tissues, doing some ice, some rest, getting the range of motion going for him in anticipation of his upcoming surgery, which I would assume would be in the next 2 to 3 weeks, if not sooner.
Dr. Brandon Seifert with us, a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. We're talking Jimmy Garoppolo as the Niners starting quarterback out with an ACL. There was fear that it was going to be more than just the ACL with the way things looked. Based on what you have seen footage-wise, are you surprised there's not more damage?
Yeah, absolutely. The video is actually pretty impressive. Again, another sports injury you have a video of. But really, his video is pretty impressive, especially when you see that knee kind of buckling to the inside. My suspicion for him would be, one of the collateral ligaments, in particular the medial collateral ligament, or MCL, which we've talked a lot about on the show before. So I think no doubt he probably at least has, maybe a lower grade injury to that, if not a little higher. That'd be probably the biggest thing just based on the video I'd be concerned about. And then in addition to that, when you see that knee kind of bend to the inside, such as his, you worry about, did he, clip part of his meniscus? or maybe even have some damage to the cartilage in his knee as well. I hadn't seen a whole lot of reporting on that. The ACL was kind of the big thing they put out there. But those would be some things I'd be suspicious for. And ultimately, those are really important things that we've talked about before, is it's those accessory injuries, the cartilage, the meniscal injuries, that really do kind of either A, slow down a rehab process, but probably more importantly, kind of determine that, you know, ultimate recovery and even some longevity in terms of how long they'll be in the league.
Well, and that's just it, is this used to be career ending, and then it's turned into career threatening, and now it's shifted to guys are back within a year. The mm-hmm. job the medical community's done has been incredible, and what you guys have done for years with repair has been just peace of mind for sure for the athlete to get out there physically to perform again, but also the mental support. And when you look at the ACL, kind of take us through the evolution and the technology side with what you guys are experts in, how it's become not career-ending or threatening anymore.
Yeah, you know, it's really remarkable when you look at all the different facets of, you know, it goes into an ACL injury and the therapy before, the therapy after, the bracing, you know, the surgical side of it, the technical things that are added into the surgery, and then even just, you know, the rapid progression into physical therapy. All those things are pretty amazing when you think about and rewind to what we used to do. I mean, even as not that long ago, as the mid-80s, as they're starting to do more of these from a procedure we call an open procedure to more of a procedure where you do it through the scope. Even in those first couple of surgeries, they still were pretty limited in their rehab, obviously still limited in their technique and the technology. But as that is caught up, you know, the really amazing things are, you know, basically you're doing the whole surgery through the scope. There's a couple of little incisions that are there when you borrow some tissue for the graft, whether that's patella or hamstring like we've talked about. But really the majority of that is done through the scope. Technology-wise, you know, initially when they started out doing these, they tried all different types of basically what we call reamers, you know, to fix an ACL. You really have to reconstruct the ACL. You can't really sew it back together. They tried that in the early days. They tried putting suture and patches over that, and that didn't work. You really have to reconstruct it with tissue, as we've talked about, whether that's patella or hamstring. And so to do that, you have to drill holes in the bone, okay, and that's what we call kind of doing the reaming part of this. So there's been a real evolution in the type of reaming that we use, how you ream, from what position in the knee do you ream, now to the point where we have these really amazing reamers where you essentially can stick this guide inside the knee, that guide comes outside of the knee while you're looking to the scope and comes and wraps around over the top of the knee. You can actually use that to drill in from the outside. And then this little reamer, if you will, has a little tip that can flip. It makes it wider, and you can actually ream backwards. So you get these amazing kind of tunnels, if you will. That's the tunnels we drill for the graft. And that really has been probably the biggest evolution over the last couple of years. It makes a huge difference. The placement of that graft in the back of the knee and the femur, which is the thigh bone, is so critical in terms of controlling the rotation and the stability. So that'd be a really amazing technical thing that we're doing now. I utilize that with all of my ACLs, and it makes a huge difference when you see where these tunnels are showing up at. I think it's always important to think about the old rehab process. You know, this is amazing to think about how quickly our guys and gals are in rehab within a couple of days. In the past, they used to park you in a cast for 6 weeks after your ACL. I mean, imagine that. So fortunately, we're not doing that anymore. So it's pretty amazing when you look at that compared to now, just how far things have come, how quickly people get back, and really this concept of you can get back now as opposed to a career-ending injury.
Well, guys come back bigger, stronger, faster in some instances. Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. A Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Jimmy G in his injury, his ACL with the Niners. Dr. Brandon, got about a minute left. And what muscle or muscle group needs to be really focused on post-ACL? Is it the quad for quarterbacks?
You know, the quad in particular for everyone is the most important thing. And in one in particular, it's called the VMO, or the vastus medialis obliquus. It's basically the quad muscle that kind of sits off to the inside part of your knee. That is absolutely critical to, you know, your recovery. It's a big part of our kind of measurement tool during your recovery process, is measuring, you know, how that muscle is getting bigger, comparing it both in terms of its size to the other knee and also its strength. There's some pretty high-level tests we can do that measure that strength between the two. We like to see that strength within 10% of the other side as kind of a guide to when you're cleared to go back and play. And that's really the most important muscle group. In addition to that, you want to make sure you're well-balanced. It's always important as an athlete to be well-balanced in terms of your muscle groups. And so even though you're working so hard on your quad, you're probably also doing quad work on the other side. So you might be a little bit off because you're working so hard on the other side too. And then you're also working so hard on your quad, you want to make sure that your hamstrings are getting the same kind of workout, so there's not kind of a mismatch between the hamstrings and the quads. And so that's always a big part of the rehab process.
Dr. Brandon, good stuff. We'll talk again. Thanks for a few.
Absolutely, Chris. You guys take care. Have a good week.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Okay, we've got a lot to do. We've got to get to these moments in Mario. Also qualify you for Nebraska Purdue tickets. And yeah, so here is Mario on beating the hell out of the quarterback. This is part of the tenderization process, as we call it in practice.
Frosty has a great phrase, you know, during practice, don't play behind your green jersey, right? If you got to go, you got to go. If you get smacked, you get smacked. Yeah, they're going to get popped, you know, so it's going to happen sometimes, you know. And then I make sure that we have that bag drill. When they're dropping back to pass, I'll smack them upside the head with the bag, and they have to throw the ball downfield. So that's a little bit of a teaching component as well, but it's their psychological makeup. They're tough kids, man. There's not a candy ass in the group.
More from Mario. Act of God. That's how you define the interception right after Stanley's big play.
We always categorize why interceptions. You've heard me talk about that before, right? That's an AOG, man. That falls under the category of AOG. It's an act of God. It's just one of those things that happened. Because I was concerned as to whether maybe he was a little too nonchalant with his mechanics, which can create that sort of problem, you know. And so I was interested in looking at that. And man, he was as crisp as could be. His eyeballs were good. His feet were good. The trajectory was good. It was just
lady football. She's evil. Don't ever, ever buy her a drink.
Man, one of those things that happened, you know, and it was a beautiful play call and the perfect time there in the defensive structure that we anticipated them to be in, and everything was set up. And, you know, the football gods sometimes get you, you know, and lady football, boy, she can be fickle, you know, and you love her to death and you want her to be your girlfriend, and guys, you're coaxing her every way you can, you know, but she'll still turn her back on you. And it's just one of those things, you know, and that's how the ball goes.
Some of us have different words for lady football. Should we get you qualified? Daddy, can you handle four?
I think we're going to have to, otherwise right. Some people are going to be pissed.
That's fine. Caller 6 through 10 qualifies right now.
Dear Lord, in the battles go through life, we ask for a chance that's fair. Chance to go all the stripes. Chance to do or dare. If we should win, let it be by the code. By faith and honor held high. We should lose, stand by the road. Cheers, winners go by.
To get an opportunity to come back here is special to me. Words can't describe how much it means to me to be back here in a place that I love, a place that I understand, a place that I want to represent.
Got to have you on Saturday. Caller 6 through 10 qualifies. Drawing tomorrow, 5:25 for Nebraska-Purdue. We want to see you at the Graduate Friday, 9th and P, 4 to 6. Myself, Jay Moore, will wave at Danny. He'll be back here in the studio. But the graduate on Friday, caller 6 through 10 right now, qualifies for Nebraska-Purdue giveaway tomorrow at 5:25. Big thanks to Brad Edwards. Big thanks to Mike Shuhart. Big thanks to Christian Gaylord. Thanks to Danny Burke, the Pride of Chicago. I'm Schmitty. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 4 with Hail Varsity.